We are continuing in here tonight a study that we started last week. It's a study that an abbreviated study because we had our Kickstart Your Summer series in June, and so we only have about seven classes or so in which we're going to try to look at this particular topic of the idea of studying community churches in light of the Scripture. And we introduced this briefly last week with a general foundation upon which to start, and that foundation being that we just need to come back to the Bible for everything that we're going to study and use it as our only source and our only authority. Just a few things to remind you of. We mentioned these in class last week, and probably in some form I'm going to try to mention these every week because there'll be people here who have not been here before, and I don't want there to be any misunderstandings. The intention of this study is not to talk about community churches in such a way that we try to demean them, that we try to put them down, that we try to be unkind in any way. We don't want to misrepresent in any way. What we're trying to do is to approach this honestly, to approach it fairly in regard to what they teach and what they believe, and to treat them justly. But we're not trying to attack anybody. We're not trying to attack any particular community church or the organization as a whole. So I hope you understand the spirit in which this is being studied. But the purpose of this study and the reason that we're even talking about it is that God commands us not to believe everything we hear. Don't believe every spirit, but try the spirits, test the spirits, whether they are of God. 1 John 4 and verse 1. God tells us, don't believe everything that people teach. 1 Thessalonians 5 says to test all things. And you know that the Bereans in Acts 17 were held up as an example of those who looked out even to what Paul was teaching and said, you know, we want to make sure that what he's saying is so. If there are individuals who are teaching and practicing things under the name of religion, but even more specifically than that, under the name of Christianity, then we have a responsibility given to us by God to say, is that what the Bible says? I've got a responsibility to do that. And the responsibility that I have is to take what a person says, or a group of persons say, or a particular religious body, what they say, and lay it down next to what the Bible says. And if there are holes, if there are inconsistencies, if there are untruths found in what man teaches, I don't need to accept that, but not based upon my goodness, not based upon how smart I am, not based upon anything that is accounted to me, but what is accounted unto God. Somebody says, well, you don't have a right to judge. Well, the Bereans, they seem to exercise a right to judge whether what they were hearing was correct or so. Jesus told us in John chapter 7 and verse 4, or John chapter 7 verse 24, to judge with a righteous judgment. And when we take that which is the righteous judgment and lay it down next to what somebody says, this is going to help us to discern and to determine if those things that are being taught are those things that are of the truth. And we need to make sure that even in this process, that what we are doing is of the faith, and that we ourselves are not boasting ourselves above what the Bible teaches. So that's just some reminders, and we won't spend that much time in reminding it every week, but I want us to make sure we put this in the proper scope so that we don't have any misunderstandings or people get feelings hurt unnecessarily because they think we're trying to come after some particular person or group. We're just trying to look at what does the Bible say in this regard. Here's what I want us to do tonight. So I want us to say, I want us to come up with an understanding of where do community churches come from? We look out at denominationalism as a whole, and we can trace back the origin of each denomination. We can trace back its origin to see when it started, who started it, why it started, where it started. we can do that. Now, what about community churches? What can we learn? What can we know about community churches? And when we talk about community churches, what are we even talking about? First thing, and I don't have this anywhere in the notes, but it's this. When we think of community church, don't think that it's limited to those bodies that have the words community church on their sign. Some of them don't necessarily put the words community church on their sign or in their name. But it's more how they're characterized and what they teach. And what I want to do tonight is exactly what I said in one of those others. I don't want to present anything to you that are my ideas or that what some third party has said about community churches. I want us to examine them in light of what have they said about themselves. And to try to be very objective about it. Some of you may be familiar with a book that's called Handbook of Denominations in the United States. This comes out almost every 5 years or so. They put out a new edition. This is the 10th edition that I have in my hand, and it's now up to the 13th edition. That was published 2 years ago, and so I downloaded that the other day just to make sure I had all the current information. But it comes out every 5 years or so, and it gives a somewhat objective view of the various religious bodies in this country, where they came from, how they started, and what their basic premises are. And so I want to give you some information that comes from this book, not that comes from me, not things I've made up, but just a particular book that, and there's a lot of quotes, and I'm just going to read. I want you to get an understanding of what community churches are, not based upon what I say, but based upon what the religious world say. Their evaluation is that one of the most important trends in American Christianity since 1980 has been the rapid increase in number and size of congregations that have few or no ties to traditional denominations. That's what, and this is under their section of community churches. This is how they're describing community churches. Increasingly in the 1980s and 90s, energetic and entrepreneurial ministers. Notice how this starts. With these dynamic ministers, they responded to population shifts by establishing congregations that reflected. They established churches that reflected the musical and social tastes of the baby boomer generation. What does that say? We're going to make some churches that match and fit this particular generation. Some of these dynamic congregations have become mega churches that are larger. Even just one mega church is larger than some entire denominations are that have multiple congregations in them. They say about community churches that doctrine is rarely a defining feature. They're not so much concerned about with what they teach. They're not so much concerned about with what they teach. Doctrine is rarely a defining characteristic. Community churches are the result of the desire that some men have had to eliminate over-churching. Interesting term. To eliminate over-churching in some community. There's just too many, in their minds, there's too many churches in this community. We're going to solve that. We're just going to absorb them all. And so they want to eliminate over-churching in some communities. They want to replace the restrictiveness and the divisiveness of denominationalism. Tell me what you think this means. To replace the restrictiveness and divisiveness of denominationalism with self-determination. Going to replace denominationalism, and we're going to replace it with self-determination. What is it? To you, what does that mean? That's interesting terminology to me. To say, here's what community churches are doing. They are interested in self-determination. What does that mean? Y'all got any ideas? Yes, mister, I'm running the sound booth tonight. That's Harrison Carter, for those of you who can't see Harrison Carter. Okay, go ahead. Okay. Okay, so like a non-denominational approach that equally receives anybody and everybody and says we're all on the same page and we're going the same place, although we may be taking different paths. That's their ideas. Dirk? Say again.
It's a me, me, me kind of group. Whatever makes me feel
good. Whatever makes me feel happy. What they wanted to do was to address the specific needs. Remember, community churches are the result of the desire to address specific needs within a community. And this is interesting. To make religious expression more immediately relevant. What does that mean to you? Since each church is adjusted. Now think about this. Since each community church is adjusted to do what? To meet the needs of different communities. Here's a community church that is put in place and developed by this particular community. And so each community church is different because it is adjusting to fit the needs of the community. Therefore, there's a great variety among these community churches in their worship and in their work. They worship, as Harrison said, they worship in different ways, and they say it's okay. You worship, you do whatever you want, and they're going to do it in different ways. But the reason they're going to say it's different is because each community is different. And so that requires some differences in styles and in teachings. The number of mega churches continues to grow. There's over 2 million people that apparently worship in mega churches. There's over 1,300 mega churches that have more than 1,000 people that are a part of them. Mega churches, this is a third party, this is an outside body evaluation. Mega churches may be compared to the shopping malls and warehouse stores. They're like Sam's and Costco and these big malls. Well, what are they like? They're like that because they offer a dazzling variety of services under one roof. They offer counseling, worship, private schools, support groups, teen clubs, movie theaters, health centers, sports teams, travel agencies, business associations, and in some places, food courts with major chain restaurants. It's like a mall. It's like a warehouse store. Notice this point. The theology, the way of thinking and teaching and approach to God, the doctrine, what the community church teaches, the theology and doctrine of community churches and mega churches varies according to the beliefs of the pastor. You go to a community church, who decides what they are going to teach about a particular matter? The pastor does. And so if there is a variation on what one community church teaches opposed to what another one teaches, it's based upon the varying views that a particular pastor may have. Some of these new paradigm churches, they advertise themselves as churches, quote, for people who do not like church. We're going to see more quotes like that. We've got a church and it's for those people who do not like church. Well, what's that going to look like? What's a church that's for people who don't like church? What's that going to look like? Many community churches and mega churches adopt some of the attitude, styles, and practices of Pentecostal churches. They may not adopt, as they say, the particular fervency of the tongues and the healing and prophecy, but they adopt some of those things. I want to talk about two of them tonight. Two of them that have become, over the last 30 years, have become the two models for community churches. Two models that when a community church starts in a particular community, they are often modeled after. They often look to these two community churches for their pattern, for their guidance, for their ideas, for their inspiration. The first one is the one that started over 35 years ago. A church up near Chicago. You may have heard of a man by the name of Bill Hybels started this. And we're going to talk more about how it started. I just want to briefly tell you about these two different ones. But started outside Chicago. It's called Willow Creek, and that is an image from one of their worship services. The other one is out in California. Started by a man by the name of Rick Warren. You've probably heard of Rick Warren more than you've heard of Bill Hybels, which is interesting because Rick Warren came after Bill Hybels. But Rick Warren has gained some great popularity, not only in this country, but around the world. And you may remember that during the 2008 presidential election that there was a debate or a discussion between the two candidates that was hosted by Rick Warren, and they talked about moral and religious issues. You may remember that Rick Warren led the prayer at the inauguration back in 2009. He's a very, very dynamic and very popular man. And yes, this is a picture from one of their worship services out at, and we're going to talk more about their various worship services in a future lesson. But those are the two models that I want to talk about tonight. And this is the textbook that most of these community churches use as kind of their guide. It's a book that Rick Warren wrote back in 95, and it is how he started the church out at Saddleback and what he did in bringing it about. And this has become the community church's Bible in how they model and how they build. And I'm going to give you some quotes out of this as well. Dirk? Yeah, Rick Warren. He does all sorts. He does all sorts. Dirk said he heard him on the radio doing a series of lessons. He is. You'll hear him a lot. You can find him pretty easily on different religious programs. But let me tell you. Let's go through these, and just briefly, I want to tell you the initial how the origin of these two, and then I want to show you more specifically how they started. But here's Willow Creek. And it is one of the more successful and famous of the community churches. This quote is from the Handbook of Denominations, the book I already told you about. This information comes, and I'm going to give you the sources. Not that y'all are writing this down, but I'm not making any of this up. These are the sources for this material. It has developed its own national network of similar growth-oriented churches. Basically, Willow Creek started in 1970-something. 72, what was it? 72, 73? No, 75. 1975 started in Chicago. And basically, Willow Creek, as well as Saddleback, Willow Creek is becoming its own denomination. It is not just a community church outside Chicago. It has become a network of community churches, and that's what that's talking about, of growth-oriented, non-denominational. That's one of their key phrases. We're just non-denominational, which really means they are interdenominational, which means we accept anybody and everybody, and that's really more appropriate. But it came because Bill Hybels was working in a youth work in the South Park Church in Park Ridge, Illinois. He had over 1,000 teenagers in that group. He applied certain things of music and drama. You'll see these over and over talking about Bill Hybels. And so what he decided was he became so successful with his youth ministry that he said, you know what, I need to take this to the next level. And so he said, you know what, would happen if I took these innovative and creative styles of service and I took them to an adult audience? And so that's what he did. He started incorporating the contemporary music, drama, and multimedia technology, and he started his Willow Creek congregation in 1975, started the first day with 125. Within two or three years, they were up to 2,000 people. And it is said today that they are somewhere around 23,000 plus on an average weekend. They have six services. They may have more than that now. That number is a couple of years old. They may have more, but on a particular weekend. And remember, community churches they don't just have services on Sunday. They have services Saturday and Sunday. So among their six services, Willow Creek claims to have somewhere over 23,000 adherents. Well, Saddleback started later. Rick Warren is younger than Bill Hybels. And here's what Rick Warren did. 1979, he moves out to California. And I'm going to give you some direct quotes from him, from his book, in just a minute. But they began similarly with a small Bible study with just one other couple. They had their first service, Easter of 1980, had 205 people show up, most of whom had never been to a church before. Today, it's become one of the most influential denominations, with approximately 20,000 people attending their weekend services. And his book, which I'm going to give you some quotes from in just a minute, has really become, as I said, the the document that is used. He took his principles that he used in developing the community church that he started and put them into this book. And they claim that more than 200,000 church leaders have been trained. And Bill Hybels up in Chicago, as well as Rick Warren out in California, they travel around doing leadership conferences, leadership seminars, teaching their principles of church development. And they claim they've done this to hundreds of thousands of people. So we've got these two community churches started. Well, how'd they get started? Willow Creek up in Chicago. How did they get started? Bill Hybels, and you've heard this before, I think. Bill Hybels, before he started his community church that became known as Willow Creek, went around knocking on doors of people in the community, taking a survey. And in a survey, he was asking people who admitted that they were unsaved or that they were unchurched, why don't you go to church? That's what he wanted to know. He went around trying to find people who didn't go to church. If he found people who did go to church, he'd say, glad you're going to church. Okay, see you later. And he ended the conversation. But if he found people in his estimation that were unchurched or unsaved, those were his target people, he wanted to find out, why don't you go to church? Here's what he found out. He found out the top four reasons that people don't go to church. Here's what they complained about. They didn't like being bugged for money when they went to church. I'm not going to church anymore because they keep bugging me for money. People said that church was boring, predictable, and routine. We just don't like that. They said that they didn't think that church was relevant to their lives. People told him at the door, I always leave church feeling guilty. I go there and they talk about sin. And when they talk about sin, I feel guilty because I have sinned and I don't like feeling guilty. And so because they keep preaching these messages that talk about sin, I'm not going to go back because I don't like leaving church feeling guilty. Now, here's the sources for this information. None of this is being made up. This is what he found when he knocked on doors, people saying, here's why I don't go to church. Well, Bill Hybels was seeking this information for what purpose? Well, because he was going to start a church. And in starting his church, he wanted to create a church that corrected the problems. These people don't like these things about going to church. Well, what I'll do is I will create a church that doesn't do any of that. If that's what they don't like, we won't do it. If that's what they do like, we will do it. We are going to make a church that makes people feel comfortable. So we find out what they don't like, and we don't do it. I want you to think about that. That's how the Willow Creek Church got started. That's how this community church got started and now has over 23,000 people as a part of it. Now has about 8,000 congregations that are a part of its association. Remember, Willow Creek is becoming its own denomination and it's spreading out. And so here's they're claiming 8,000 different other groups and other places that are kind of under their umbrella, under their guidance from having been started from that same model and having claimed to have train tens of thousands of church leaders in their particular model. You go out to the community and you ask the community, what don't you like about church? And then you seek to fix it, to make them happy. What about Saddleback? Saddleback started in much the same way, and I want to read you all of these quotes. All of these quotes are going to be directly out of Rick Warren's book on Purpose-Driven Church. Here's what he said. November of 1973, Warren says, I drove 350 miles to hear Dr. W.A. Criswell speak, renowned pastor of the largest Baptist church in the world. Warren said, I had no doubt that God had called me to ministry, but I was unsure if God wanted me to become a pastor. As I listened to Criswell speak, God spoke personally to me. And God made it very clear that He was calling me to be a pastor. Then and there, I promised God I'd give my entire life to pastoring a single church if that was His will for me. He says, I had no doubt that God was talking to me, that God told me this. So during the summer of 1979, while he was finishing up at seminary, he says, I practically lived in university libraries doing research. I was 25 years old. He says, as I sat there in the dusty, dimly lit basement of that university library, I heard God speak clearly to me. Second time. Heard God speak clearly to me. And he said, God said apparently, that's where I want you to plant a church. My whole body began to tingle with excitement and tears welled up in my eyes. I had heard from God. The Bible tells us that God's revelation is complete, that God's revelation is final, that it has been once for all delivered. If God's revelation to mankind has been delivered once and for all, then that would indicate that God is not going to reveal himself directly to man anymore. But here is a man who has become world renowned for having started a church. And it started when he said, God spoke to me. And so he says, I decided that we, he and his wife, would make, that we would make no effort at all. This is when he got to California and he was ready to start his church. He said, I decided we would make no effort at all to attract Christians from other churches to Saddleback. We would not even borrow workers from other area churches to start Saddleback. Since I felt called to reach unbelievers, I determined to begin with unbelievers rather than with a core of committed Christians. This was not the way that all the books on church growth starting out said to do, but I felt certain that it was what God was calling me to do. He said, our focus would be limited to reaching the unchurched for Christ, people who, for one reason or another, did not attend any existing church. First 12 weeks, interesting, Warren does the same thing that Hybels did. He's going to establish his church. And what does he do? He goes door to door talking to the people. He says, I first wanted to listen to what they thought their most pressing needs were. Felt needs, whether real or imaginary, are a starting point for expressing love to people. First thing he wanted to do was go and to talk to the people and to hear what the people thought they needed. I'm getting ready to build a church. Well, what kind of church are you going to build? Well, I don't know yet. I got to go find out. How are you going to find out? I'm going to go ask the people what they feel that they need. 6 years earlier, he said, I was, 6 years earlier, before he started Saddleback, he had read Robert Schuller's book, Your Church Has Real Possibilities. And in that book, Schuller told that he had gone door to door in 1955, and here's the two questions Schuller asked. When he went door to door, he asked people, why don't you go to church? And what do you want in a church? Rick Warren liked that idea. He thought the questions needed to be updated a little bit for the 1980s. But he said, I'm going to take those questions and I'm going to go ask those same things. But he came up with five questions. Number one, he asked, what do you think is the greatest need in this area? He got the answer and he wrote it down. Second question, he said, are you actively attending any church? If they said yes, I thanked them, moved on to the next home. I didn't bother asking the other three questions. Not looking for those people. Number three, if they were said no to number two, I'm not going anywhere, why do you think most people don't attend church? Why do you think most of people don't attend church? When I asked why they thought other people didn't attend, they usually gave me their personal reasons anyway, but he wanted to keep it third person. Number four, if you were to look for a church to attend, what kind of things would you look for? Remember, all the while, he's taking notes. Number five, he said, what could I do for you? What advice can you give to a minister that really wants to be helpful to people? He's going out to start a church. And he goes to the community and he asks the community, if you were going to go to church anywhere, what would you look for and what would make you most comfortable? He spent 12 weeks, remember, doing that. After 8 weeks, he says, I summarize what we learned about the unchurched during our survey. I summarize what we learned about their hang-ups about church in a philosophy of ministry statement. Notice that. He created a philosophy of ministry statement for his church. Where did that philosophy of ministry statement come from? From the hang-ups that people had about why they didn't like church. That's how he decided what his philosophy of ministry was going to be. These are his words. It became the blueprint for our evangelism strategy. Next, he says, I wrote an open letter to the unchurched of the community based upon what we had learned. I just figured that an open letter to the community might be the fastest way to get the word out about our new church. First sentence of that letter clearly stated our focus and position. The first letter said, at last, a new church for those who've given up on traditional church services. At last, here's a church for those of you who hate church. It went on to explain the kind of church that we were starting. The letter addressed the major concerns. All of those hang-ups that they had, here's the letter. It addressed the major concerns of the unchurched and announced a church service that was designed to counteract. We're going to take care of all of those things. It's designed to counteract the common excuses that individuals were giving when he went to their door. The entire tone of the letter was written to appeal to what the unchurched were looking for. You said this is what you're looking for, I'm going to give it to you. You said this is what you wanted in a church, and we're going to provide it for you. He said, I knew that if our church was going to attract and win the unchurched, it was going to take a different kind of service than what I grew up with. So he asked the question, what style of worship would be the best witness to unbelievers? And he spends a whole couple paragraphs talking about the kind of service they were planning. And the service was so intricate, they even started having dress rehearsals for their services because they wanted to make sure everything was just perfect. And so here Saddleback, who has helped to establish 30 other daughter congregations in its own little denominational group around the country. And his book, the 1995 book, has made him world-renowned, famous, and has helped to create other leaders just like him. I don't know what your thoughts are when you hear this, when you see this. And again, all of this is a reflection, is taken directly from their documents. This is not to represent them in some way other than the way they've represented themselves in their own words. This is how they have said they have started their churches. And that's what we're looking for in this lesson, is not to look at all the intricate doctrines or practices, but say, how did they start? And how did they start? Here's community churches. Why is the community church called the community church? It's the community who made it. It's called the community church because it reflects all that the community wanted, all that appeals to the community. And this is what we'll give you in a church. And that's what he told them in the letter. We're going to give you what you asked for. And so it is a community church. Imagine what would happen. Imagine what would happen if instead of appealing to the community, we tried to appeal to the Lord. And instead of trying to appeal to the wishes of the community and what they thought they needed, what if we appealed to the Lord and what He thinks is needed? Is that different? Is it different to say, what does God want, from what will make the community happy? Jerry talks about what God's people were doing when Moses was up on Mount Sinai and how they were down below. They thought what they were doing was right in making that golden calf. Obviously, it was not, and we're going to be out of time. But what does the Bible say about starting a church? If somebody wanted to start a church, Where should they go? Go and find out what man wants in a church? You know, the Bible says that the Word of God is a seed. It's a seed. What happens when you take a seed and plant it in Florida, and then you take a seed from that same packet and plant it in Tennessee, and then you take a seed from that same packet of seeds and you plant it in Montana, and then you take a seed from that same packet of seeds and you plant it in South Africa? What happens with those seeds if they are equally watered, nourished? What's going to grow? Is it going to be different? Is it going to be adapted and become? Is it going to be look like its culture? Is the plant going to? Is it going to look completely different depending on where it is? Or is a flower going to be a flower? Is a rose going to be a rose? Why is that the case? Because when we take this seed and we plant it, we're not going to get a whole lot of different plants springing up. Bible, Paul says that when he went about preaching, he preached the same thing in every place. So that when he wrote the book of Ephesians, he could say there is only one church. Well, Paul, how can you say there's only one church? Because we've only been preaching one gospel. And one message, one word, one seed produces one fruit. That's it. If we were going to start a church, we move into a community and there is no church there. If we were going to start a church, what would we do? The only thing that we know about the church, and this goes back to last week's lesson, the only thing that we know about the church is what's in this book. The only thing that we know about what the church is supposed to look like and to do and to teach is in this book. The only person who has a right to regulate what the church does and teaches is the one who gave us this book. And if I find people who don't like the church that follows this book, do I need to change the church to make the community happy? Be not conformed to the community, to this world. Oh, but we'll wrap the church around it to make it more comfortable. Real quick, Terry, we got the second bell, but Terry, go ahead, real quick. There's a lot of denominations that have given up their particular affiliation with a particular group and have branched out. There are a number of community churches in this community. They're not that don't have community church tied to their name. Don't have that specific word. But you'll find a lot of them. Quick, Dirk.
In other words, community is world. You just made
that point. Pardon?
It's the world is what it is. The world is condemned.
Yeah. Another word for community, Dirk says, is the world, and that's obviously condemned by God. Think about these things. We presented a lot tonight, and all we're trying to do is lay things out and say, here's what they're saying, and here's where they started. Here's what the Bible says. Do they match? And if they don't match, which one should we follow? That's not a hard question. Thank you all so much for your good attention tonight.